Hi, this is Dr. Ronald Hoffman. If you happen to be on a weight loss regimen, studies show that as fat cells shrink, they release stored toxins into the system that can actually poison metabolic pathways and slow your metabolism, causing your weight to plateau even in the face of stringent diet adherence. That's why I've created the Intelligent Medicine Detox Protocol, a collection of carefully curated supplements to mobilize toxin elimination, easing the blahs that sometimes compromise your dietary resolve. The Intelligent Medicine Detox Protocol is an easy way to get the exact combination of the targeted nutrients you need. Just go to drhoffmanstore.com for more information and to purchase. Plus, you'll find easy-to-follow links to our heart health and immunity protocols and much more. And for a limited time, you'll get free shipping on all of your store orders. For more details, just go to drhoffmanstore.com. That's drhoffmanstore.com. Welcome back to today's Intelligent Medicine. It's our weekly Q&A with Layla, wherein we answer your questions. Radio program at AOL.com is the destination for questions. And Layla, remind me of what you've written about lately, your articles and your podcasts.
Oh, well, you know, it's National Nutrition Month.
Right.
So I wanted to remind everybody the benefit of a nutrition consult, that it's necessary.
Basic.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean...
Even if you're not sick.
Even if you're not sick.
Yeah.
You have to examine what you're eating. When you take your pet to the veterinarian, mm-hmm. one of the first questions, if your pet is sick, what are you feeding them?
Yeah.
We need to be asked that same question. Mm-hmm. And I think as you have with me for so many years, Dr. Hoffman, you've made the nutrition consultation mandatory.
Right.
I think that's how it should be.
Right.
You know.
How many practices in America, when you go see the doctor, you must see the nutritionist? I don't care what your problem is.
I can only think of a handful of doctors that I've met who mm-hmm. have actually said, you don't see me unless you agree to see the nutritionist.
Even for an assessment, you know, like I'm on a great diet, I don't need to see the nutritionist.
Yeah.
See the nutritionist, you know, let's do an assessment. Let's verify and validate that the diet matches your health circumstances and your genetics.
Exactly. Okay. Right. That, and you may find that, oh, wow, I didn't know that, or I didn't realize I should tweak this or not eat that or eat more of that.
Good theme. You'll find that article on our website at drhoffman.com. And also, if you are on Facebook, Twitter, it's posted there. And we've also got a whole bunch of great podcasts, and you do one every week.
Yes.
Okay, so let's get to questions.
Okay, we've got one from Ed, and Ed describes himself as the old hippie. Okay. What is your opinion of resistant starch for those following a low-carb diet? Can we safely go hog wild on rice and pasta that's been cooked, cooled, and reheated?
Well, I'm going to defer to you on that, because I'm aware of this phenomenon of
resistant
starch.
Yeah.
But you perhaps can explain it better.
Yeah. Well, Ed, here's the thing. If we go hog wild on rice, pasta, and all that, we're no longer on a low-carb diet.
The question is, how resistant is it? Is it completely insoluble and completely releasing its carbohydrate content?
And more of the favorites would not be necessarily something like rice or pasta. Pasta, which is wheat, which is problematic.
Right.
But more things like potatoes, white beans that you've cooked, mm-hmm. cooled. You can reheat it. What happens
is... Make
your own potato salad.
Right.
Make your own potato salad. It's the way the molecular structure realigns itself.
Right.
That makes it then a resistant starch. That's very good food.
Right.
For beneficial
bacteria.
But
it's resistant. It's not zero.
It's not zero.
Zero calories.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Now, I've had people push me to the point of saying, well, what if I eat my pasta... you know, cool it and I reheat it and then, mm-hmm. well, yes, if you're going to insist and you're going to have that, do it that way.
What's the role of resistant starch? It's not so much so that we can eat carbs and not gain weight.
It's for bowel health and the creation, the production of short chain fatty acids.
Right, because it acts as
which are known to be very beneficial for colon health.
It acts as a fuel or a food for the beneficial bacteria to flourish.
Mm-hmm.
These are the... they're oligosaccharides.
Yes,
they're called,
the oligosaccharides,
which are mm-hmm. An example of which is acacia fiber, mm-hmm. or also fructose oligosaccharides (FOS).
Yes, FOS,
which tend to make you gassy sometimes at first.
It can,
and is
probably not a great idea if you have SIBO, small intestine bacterial overgrowth.
And but Candida as well. Yeah.
We use this in some of our patients with colitis, ulcerative colitis.
Less some of our patients disease. With like intractable constipation.
Oh, sure.
Maybe helped with FOS.
Right.
That's something else. Because it's feeding the beneficial bacteria, which is helpful. And the thing about the resistant starch also, yeah, it will have less impact on your blood sugar to eat a chilled potato.
Slower absorption.
Yeah. Slower absorption.
Yep.
That's one thing that's helpful.
Lower glycemic index.
Lower glycemic index. So it's good for blood sugar issues.
So the same food steaming hot out of the oven or out of the
Or out of the pasta, pot. Boiling water that the pasta you've made.
Is different when it cools.
Yes.
It's kitchen chemistry.
It's kitchen chemistry. It's food science, really, at its finest. We also like resistant starch in the setting of inflammatory bowel disease. Can be very beneficial, but only when the patient is ready, when symptoms have somewhat subsided. Because a favorite therapeutic diet is specific carbohydrate diet.
For which those starches are illegal.
Those starches are illegal. When the patient is feeling better, when symptoms are under control, they're able to get off their medication, I say, guess what? Let's boil some potato or
what a treat.
Have some white bean salad.
Oh, boy.
Let's see how you do.
Right,
and they look forward to something like that.
Yeah.
And often it can up their production of the short chain fatty acids.
Right, which so ultimately is healthy for repair and for maintenance of healthy bowel function.
Yes.
Maybe not in the phase where you're bleeding and have severe diarrhea and ulceration.
No. I would never suggest you go into resistant starch at that time. That's an acute situation, and you need to be medically managed and very strict on the diet.
This is actually the basis of a conundrum in inflammatory bowel disease called Gibson's conundrum, which is this idea that Gibson is the guy who developed the low FODMAP diet at Monash University in Australia. And he says there's a conundrum, which is on the one hand, with the low FODMAP diet can relieve symptoms and reduce bacterial overgrowth.
Yeah.
But it also minimizes production of these healthy short-chain fatty acids, which are actually synthesized by bacteria. And the bacteria have to be nourished by some of the foods that are taken away in the low FODMAP diet.
Right. In very much the same way.
Because the O, if I'm not mistaken, in FODMAP stands for oligosaccharides. Right.
Oligosaccharides.
So you take them out.
So legumes are out. Legumes are definitely a FODMAP, much more than a potato.
Right.
However, it's the same concept as when you have somebody with some very bad SIBO, you're not necessarily going to hit them with the probiotic right away because that probiotic may go join the SIBO party.
Right.
First, you want to be able to eliminate, get their bowel a little more healthy where they can take a probiotic to reinoculate the gut. It's kind of the same way with many of these FODMAP foods with the prebiotic fibers.
There's a study on that, and it says it's a study on the relationship between probiotics and brain fog, and it was thought that probiotics could make SIBO worse, which caused brain fog, but only in people who have SIBO. So most people they don't get a bad effect.
And by the way, I've also heard from some of my colleagues that they swear by some particular probiotics that they use immediately for SIBO, and they get amazing results. That's great. I'm not saying that everybody with bad SIBO should not take a probiotic right away. Right. It's a little bit of a matter of what is happening in your particular case.
And different strokes for different folks.
It is. Yeah. It really, really is. And that's another reason for an assessment, a true assessment. So that would be something.
Okay. Good point at which to pause and allow one of our sponsors to share this important message with you. Here goes.
Do achy, stiff joints slow you down? Would you like to put some of the cushion back in your joints and cartilage? Would you like to clinically reduce everyday joint aches and pains? Hi, this is Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and if you answered yes, then good news. Our friends at Purity Products want to send you a bottle of their legendary Ultimate HA joint formula for just $9. Ultimate HA features the joint-boosting benefits of hyaluronic acid. HA works like a shock absorber, helping you to cushion and soothe your joints. Plus, this HA also hydrates your skin, and people say they look better too. Just a few capsules a day, and you deliver powerful support for your joints, cartilage, skin, and connective tissue. So call 1-800-983-1154 and get a full-size bottle of HA7 for only $9, and you also get free shipping. Call now to claim your $9 trial bottle of HA7 with free shipping. 1-800-983-1154. Please move fast, so call now. 1-800-983-1154.
thanks for listening, and thanks for supporting our sponsors. They're what make Intelligent Medicine a continuing free resource to you. And now back to our questions. What's next, Layla?
Oh, actually, we have an email from Carol who wanted to let us know about a particular sport that you might find interesting. Hi, Dr. Hoffman. On your radio program today, you were discussing the health benefits of various forms of exercise. You mentioned that tennis is tops on the list. And in case you haven't already, I thought you might enjoy hearing about pickleball. It's one of the most popular newer games in senior communities today,
yes,
including the one I live in New Jersey. And it takes place on a miniature tennis court. It's kind of a combo. And I went along, Carol, and I looked at YouTube.
I'm looking at pictures. Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you for sending us that link. It's like a combo of tennis and badminton.
Yep.
And that looks awfully fun.
Two or four players use solid paddles made of wood or composite materials to hit a perforated polymer ball, similar to a wiffle ball. So the ball does not travel at really high velocities. That's a good thing.
It's not dodgeball.
Yeah. It's sort of like... It's a sort of a slower floaty ball. Uh-huh. And so, you know, you're not going to get like, 100 mile serves. You know, it's not like, a Wimbledon, you know. I think that's a cool sport. It's also, there's a lot of movement.
Yes.
It requires some eye-hand coordination. Mm-hmm. And it sounds good. I've never played it, but... You know,
I grew up playing badminton with my cousins growing up.
It's the kind of thing you can set up in a yard.
At the family compound.
Right.
We just go out and play some badminton. Mm-hmm. And then we go and play volleyball. Mm-hmm. And then we go to the beach. And then we come back and play some more badminton.
The only thing problem with badminton is that you end up just descending into laughter. And you're just lying on the ground convulsing in laughter.
That's either that or I would be accused of doing a rain dance. It would rain soon after. It's like, stop rain dancing. Yeah. Anyway, you'd have to be there.
You had to be there.
But Carol, thank you very much. Any movement is good. Any sport is good. And if this is what you enjoy. And Carol, she says, at age 67, I love riding my bike over to our rec complex, playing pickleball with my friends. That's so cool.
That's awesome. And riding a bike over is a really good idea.
Yep.
To amplify the benefits.
Yes, yes. Thank you for that, Carol. All right. We have an email from Cheryl. Dear Dr. Hoffman, can you comment on the FDA-approved medical food Fostium for osteoporosis? It contains genistein. It requires a doctor's prescription.
This is like the movie, like Young Frankenstein.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know whether it's genistein or genistein.
Genistein.
And he kept saying, it's Frankenstein.
It's Frankenstein.
Which is a little bit of an inside joke, you know, Mel Brooks joke about how Jews try to anglicize their names. You know, it's not, my name is, it's not, Rothstein, it's Rothstein.
Is that what Spider-Man did?
Oh, I don't know.
Was it Spider-Man?
His name was Spider-Man. No, it's Spider-Man.
Spider-Man, yes. Anyway, so Cheryl's wondering about this medical food, Fostium. She says, I'm 63. I have borderline osteoporosis with a T-score of -2.5. I'm on your osteoporosis protocol except for strontium because it significantly raised my blood pressure. Now, I've never seen that with strontium. The raising of blood pressure.
Okay, so first, you know, tackle that strontium. Yeah. What appears to the one knock on strontium, and I'll be, forthright about it, is that some studies in England have shown a very, very rare incidence, higher likelihood of blood clots, but only in people who are more likely to have blood clots to begin with. So that is a caution on strontium.
Right.
So somebody who's had like a deep vein thrombosis or a stroke or, you know, some kind of blood clot condition, I might say strontium, be careful. But raising blood pressure, I don't know.
I've never seen that. That is very interesting.
When I hear side effects, I never dismiss side effects. I always go, look, is it an expected side effect? Okay, I get it. That's been reported. Mm-hmm. If it's not been reported, I go, it could be a coincidence, but let's pay attention to that because we want to see if a pattern emerges where other people develop this.
Yeah.
Very unusual things happen. I mean, I had a guy who came in today who said that he took a common blood pressure medication called Cozar. And he said he developed a rare side effect. And check this side effect out. He says when he laughs, not like a ha-ha, but like when he laughs,
belly laugh,
we just did, he passes out. He says it's a known medical, now such a weird side effect.
Is
it's
that
very rare.
Vagaling out somehow?
It has to do with the way that blood pressure medications act on the vagal nerve. Yeah, somehow. So, yeah, okay. I mean, whatever.
Is that why some blood pressure medications cause coughing?
Yeah, that is much more common with that medication, yes. Okay. But anyway, coming back to strontium, as far as I'm concerned, is safe, but, you know, we're a little cautious.
Yeah.
High blood pressure, we'll look for that, but it's not a known consequence. Yeah. So, all right, so genistein. Right.
or however you'd like to call it, Dr. Right. Robin, that's fine.
Yeah.
Cheryl is wondering if she should take something like genistein. Well,
okay, what's fostium?
So fostium, it's a medical food. It contains genistein, which is a natural plant estrogen from soybeans, vitamin D, and zinc.
But probably much higher than if you ate a piece of tofu every
day. Right, you'd have to eat a half a barrel of tofu.
Right, it's really concentrated genistein.
It's very concentrated.
So genistein is estrogenic.
Yeah. It's estrogenic.
It's like it's almost in a way like taking a form of estrogen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like taking HRT.
Well, not quite, because but you know it's called a SERM. It's a selective estrogen receptor modulator.
Yeah.
So it has effects on the bone, good effects on the bone, but it might also have some off-target effects. It can't necessarily just target the bone laser-like. It might have off-target effects on, say, in the breast or on the uterus or something like that.
The reason I say unregulated HRT, I've had more than a handful of anecdotes of my postmenopausal clients who say, I didn't need any HRT. I just drank a glass of soy milk every day. And I wondered, but the cases were is that they were having hot flashes until they started drinking a glass of soy milk every day.
And it works.
And I started to wonder.
It works.
Yeah.
It works.
It works.
It's actually, there are good studies on genistein for hot flashes.
Yeah.
But it's interesting that they actually got approval for a medical food, probably based on some studies that show that it somewhat enhances bone density.
Yeah. Well, here's some of the bad news about for fostium.
Yeah.
There have been case reports of women who developed abnormal uterine bleeding, which subsided upon discontinuing. Mm-hmm.
And that could be a pre-uterine cancer.
Yeah, yeah. So it's not recommended for women to take fostium if diagnosed with cancer of the breast or any other reproductive organs. Since there is no research examining the effect of fostium in breast cancer, we're unaware of the effects that fostium has on breast cancer risk. And in addition, data from studies examining if plant estrogen directly lowers incidence of both of bone fracture are inconsistent. So taking everything into consideration,
I would say it's sort of a weak option for enhancing bone.
Right.
But
and this of course is not a substitute for professional medical advice and all of that. So Cheryl, I think we would highly recommend you check in with your practitioner.
Right.
About all of that. So
we have time to squeeze one more in, I think.
Let's see here. Oh, Dr. Hoffman, I came across an article I thought you would find interesting. Low-carb diets linked to atrial fibrillation.
Well, we need about an hour for that one. But, you know, actually, I'll sum it up. And I just wrote an article about this. So this was based on the headline. It was the week of keto crotch. You know, all these studies.
Keto crotch. We get to say it again on another podcast.
Hang on, Layla. Curb your enthusiasm. So we ran down the keto crotch campaign, which is basically a smear campaign against keto diet, which is very misguided and based on no scientific bona fides.
Yeah.
But in the very same week, several studies came out as ostensibly attacking low-carb diets, and this was one of them. And it's a low-carb diet linked to atrial fibrillation. So my God, that's a serious, serious problem. Atrial fibrillation might be a little bit more bad than keto crotch. I don't know. Depends on how old you are in your lifestyle.
Right.
But anyway, we got the young women with the keto crotch. We got the seniors with the atrial fibrillation.
Yeah.
So what's the study? The study's from China. And they looked at, 14,000 or, many Chinese, and they rated them in terms of diets, low carb, high carb, and intermediate carb. And the low-carb group had a slightly higher incidence of atrial fibrillation. Now, you would say, well, how dangerous was it? Was it three times the rate or four times the rate or twice the rate? No, it was just 18% more, which is not a big effect.
Okay.
But what was this based on? And by the way, the high-carb diet had a 16% higher risk of atrial fibrillation.
Oh, well.
So easily the headline could have been low-carb and high-carb diets
yes.
May be associated with atrial fibrillation.
Right.
But what is the low-carb diet that they looked at? It was 44.8% of calories as carbs. Less.
That's not a low-carb diet.
That's more like the standard American diet.
Exactly.
It's sort of like a crappy diet.
Right.
Which might be high in fat and high in protein and with a lot of carbs.
Right. So that was not a low-carb diet at all.
No, and it was done in China and they ate a lot of really
flawed methodology
Poor quality food.
Exactly.
It's not representative of people on the kind of low-carb diets, healthy low-carb diets we put people on. And by the way, when you restrict healthy fruits and vegetables and fibers and foods rich in magnesium and potassium, it's more likely you'll get atrial fibrillation. It does make sense.
Yes.
Because one theory about atrial fibrillation is maybe partially inflammatory. So these healthy nutrients we get from fresh fruits and vegetables may be protective.
And you
don't have to have a lot of sugar or starch in that diet.
But if you have sugar and starch, that'll do it. A. B, if you add alcohol to this mix, forget about it.
Yeah.
And they're blaming alcohol for the increase in AFib, especially amongst older people who have more time to go to happy hour.
I don't know if in the study they controlled for alcohol intake.
I'm not sure myself.
They did.
Yeah.
But anyway, it's a very bad study. But what kind of ticked me off about it is that the author, I think, was really unethical because he issued a statement saying, this study demonstrates that low-carb diets could be problematic and blah.
That was not a low-carb diet.
How can you say that?
Yeah.
I guess you want to, you did some study and you want to grab some headlines.
Mm-hmm.
And so you give some interviews and you seek relevance for a study that was also based on food frequency questionnaires over what? How many? 20 years?
Oh, forget about it.
Do you remember what you ate 20 years ago?
No. And on FFQs like that, which is notorious for, first of all, recall bias, lack of recall.
Wishful thinking.
And I want to give the right answer. I want them to know that I ate right even though
virtuous,
I didn't.
Virtuous.
That kind of thing. Yeah. So very hard to use.
According to recall questionnaires, 99% of high school freshmen are sexually active, according to recall questionnaires, and have, have had sexual partners. Maybe wishful thinking.
Right, Oh my goodness. So, Joe, thank you for this article, but unfortunately it's clickbait.
Clickbait.
It was not a low-carb diet.
Yeah, and it's a study, but oh my goodness. And if you want the lowdown on, I think, a conspiracy, The Plot Against Keto is a great post that I put up last week that talks about a concerted effort to poison the well against low-carb diets.
Yes.
And there's, follow the money trail. Why? Who's to, who's going to benefit? The Latin phrase is qui bono, which means, who benefits. There are a lot of powerful interests now who want to create synthetic meat substitutes.
Mm-hmm.
One of the studies that was cited there, not this study, was sponsored by Kellogg's Corn Flakes.
Oh, my.
Another one was sponsored by the Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine, which is a vegan interest group wants to prove that meat is bad.
Mm-hmm.
Different study, but they also demonstrate supposedly the superiority of a vegan meal to a meat-based meal. You got to see where that's coming from. Weight Watchers itself is sort of a mixed diet program. They've been taking a beating. Keto has really crushed them in terms of popularity. They're stealing three quarters of their stock valuation. They went from 80 to 20 in their stock price on the exchange.
Yeah.
And that's because of the popularity of low carb dieting, which they are not, and they have not emulated that trend.
Yeah.
And they, you better believe that they've got a lot of advertising bucks to, promulgate these stories and to get them out to health writers and to also, use paid influencers
to come up with phrases like keto crunch.
Yeah. Yeah. By the way, I'm waiting for my paycheck. I'm an influencer. I'm not getting a check from the meat board. I want a check.
Right. The Cattlemen's Association.
Full disclosure, olive oil is a sponsor.
Yeah.
That is a fat.
Yeah.
It's a healthy fat. But, I want some money from the avocado board, from the nut board.
Uh-huh.
Where's
the almond board.
Where's
Where
my
you?
Payola?
There you go.
No. Okay. Anyway, I'm just not playing my cards right. That's all the time we have. We've gone a little over. We thank you for indulging us. We've gone off on some tangents here. We'll be back next week with hopefully more abbreviated version of our weekly Q&A with Layla. We'll try and be concise. Radioprogram@AOL.com is the destination for your questions, as usual.
Thank you for listening, everyone.
I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.
This is Layla Mudin, RD. I see patients regularly, along with Dr. Hoffman. If you require a nutrition consult with me but live out of town, there's no need to travel to New York City. I have telephone consultations with clients from all over the country. Please visit drhoffman.com for more information. And to set up an appointment, call 212-779-1744. That's 212-779-1744. I look forward to being a collaborator in your healthcare.